Now, in this second conference, I'd like to give my impressions and my own experience of my visit to Medjugorje. I'm beginning to realize from people who share that everybody that goes there is called. That is no accident. And there's an interesting story behind it. Many say that the thought of going there has pursued them for many months, and they were drawn there as though by a magnet. And when they arrived there, they felt at peace, blessed, some more than others, with special graces of many kinds, like healing of body, relationships, emotional healing, graces of spiritual growth in prayer, insights about their spiritual journey, and of course a greater love for our Blessed Mother, for the Rosary, and especially the grace of conversion. Well, maybe I fit into that category too. I have conducted three large pilgrimages, two to Palestine and one to Fatima, and then in Spain to Madrid, Toledo, Segovia, Zaragoza, and Avila. And then from there into Lourdes, France, and to Lisieux, the home and the Basilica of St. Teresa, Little Flower. I have felt that it's too much of a drain on me now, and I have given up conducting them. But many people right here, some of you, have asked me if I would go, they would go. I didn't feel called to conduct a pilgrimage. But they kept pestering me to go to Medjugorje. So I finally said a prayer, and I said, Lord and Blessed Mother, if you want me to go, then I want a special sign. I don't want to go because people are pushing me. I want to go because you want me to go. My sign was a fleece, if you know what I mean, placing a demand that the Lord give me a special sign that would be a proof that he wants me to go. And the sign was that somebody would come forth and pay my entire trip and say, go. And I would not tell them. And that's what happened. One of my friends gave me a check for $1,000 and said, go. That wasn't enough. So several others came forth to the amount of $400, and that paid for the entire trip. Now, if I didn't go, what do you think the Lord would do? Well, I leave you. Cancel the check. So, in short order, I had to renew my passport and also to try to set up the trip, which was done quite quickly. And here I was leaving on July the 19th, and you know this summer was terrible. Well, I had all kinds of rosy thoughts about going on a private pilgrimage where I'd be alone, could enjoy everything, and wouldn't be troubled by a large group of pilgrims. So we go to Kennedy Airport, 95 outside. We get in the plane. I'd say there are between 400 and 500 people on that plane. But I was told by the tour director that arranged a trip there would be 38 other pilgrims going on that trip. They had no priest. No sooner was I in the waiting room than one of the ladies from Missouri saw me with the 206 tours. Oh, she said, you're going with us? We don't have any priest. I didn't say anything. So now we're getting on the plane and we're all set to go off. Meantime, though, they don't turn the air conditioning on. And it was 1 hour before he announced. In the meantime, a terrible thunderstorm started. Lightning, terrific rain, and everything. In fact, a man on the ground was struck by lightning. So With all that developing, he got on the intercom. The pilot said, "The weather's too bad to start. We're going to wait. Meantime, no air conditioning." Then after a while, he said, "We're going to get in line to take off," and we waited. And finally, he got on the intercom again. He said, "We just can't leave." And it was 4 hours that we were in that plane without air conditioning. And it really, it was very trying. It was like a sauna. And eventually we did take off. But that's when many of us realized this trip was not just a pleasant tour. It was a pilgrimage. And it was the first thing the Lord was asking of us. So it was 3 hours late, we got into Dubrovnik, and we actually got to Medjugorje at 10 o'clock at night. Well, on the bus trip up the scenic drive to Medjugorje, it was enough daylight for us to see and enjoy the scenery. It's beautiful along the Adriatic Sea. But on the trip, they asked me to lead them in the rosary. And that's when I finally introduced myself, because on the plane I didn't meet everybody, but now that we're all in one bus, they asked me to lead them. So I finally told them who I was and what my ministry was, and they seemed pretty happy about that. So we said the rosary and sang a few hymns and got to our destination. We were broken up. 17 of us were in one home, actually a kind of motel. And it was 10:30, we had dinner that night. And we went to bed on that dinner. Believe it or not, I really slept, because we had lost at least a complete night of sleep. There wasn't much sleeping on the plane. And we lost a half a day. So it was that jet lag. And so we were up at, some got up early and did their own thing, either went to the Hill of the Apparitions or went to the church and just wanted to walk around. Our first full day, I concelebrated at the English Mass, which is always at 10 o'clock, or whatever language has that Mass. It could be German, but it happened to be English. And about 16 priests were there. It was a full church. People were very responsive and devout. They were led by an Irish pilgrim group with their priests. I then met the Croatian sisters. I do speak Croatian, so I was in. And spoke to them in Croatian. They were happy to know that I could speak their language. And I arranged to celebrate the 10 o'clock Mass in English in the church on Saturday. That was several days later. Now, after the Mass, we went with a group and a guy to speak to Visca. She was very available, smiling presence, seemingly in good health, answered all the questions with real wisdom. And it was then that I asked her if Mary was going to appear, continue to appear after August 15th. Remember, we were in July. Our Lady had previously said the Lord permitted her to appear during the Marian year, which would end August 15th, and she said she did not know. And of course we know now, after the fact, she is still appearing. Will that be until the end of this year? Perhaps. Now that's another big question, because after she stops appearing, the signs will begin. Then after the meeting with the pilgrims, I went up to her and talked with her, just very briefly, not very much. From there we went to see Ivan, and he makes a fine presence. He's tall, about 6 feet at least, good weight, smiling, very much at ease, but not as vocal as Visca. He answered questions with honest and wise answers, and both visionaries were asked deep theological questions, to which some of Ivan said he didn't know the answer. Some questions asked were, why are there rich and poor in the world and so much misery? Also, why children and youth are so misled? He gave a fair answer to these questions, but to others he didn't know the answer. When he was asked about the 10 secrets, he said, "Well, they're secrets. Ha ha. Can't tell them." And at his home, I had a confrontation with a man who asked just such a question, a theological question. And I said he should not have embarrassed him. And then he got resentful about it. And things were beginning to heat up. And then I suddenly realized what was happening, so I said, "Peace, God bless you," and I walked away. Later in the afternoon, he met me and apologized. And it was after the evening mass, and he embraced me and I him. I also met Father Slavko Barbaric in the plaza outside the church, who asked me to lead the English people in a 1 hour of adoration before the Blessed Sacrament from 2 to 3 o'clock. Now, that included the Rosary, the Litany of the Sacred Heart, the Litany of Our Lady. We sang Marian hymns. And then I introduced them for 15 minutes to centering prayer. And it seemed like they were pleased because I got a number of people who said how happy they were with that hour. But by this time, my shtetl lag was catching up with me again. So I went back and slept for another 2 hours. And then at 6 o'clock is when the big evening begins. All the people, you see long lines cutting through the fields, down the streets, everywhere. Long lines of people coming to the church. And they say the 15 decades of the Rosary. Sometimes it's the 10 decades before the Mass, the glorious mysteries after the Mass. Now that's very fitting. The Mass was by Father Pervan, and there were 36 priests concelebrating. There was a beautiful chant by the people. The organ was played by Father Barbaric, and the sisters led the singing, and they do quite well. Gospel was read in 5 languages, depending on the different languages present. Church was crowded even outside. By crowded, I mean all the aisles filled. You cannot kneel. They're so packed. And they stand for 3 hours. Or they kneel for that long. And many of the priests were hearing confessions after the Mass. And Father Pervan, I met him after there for a few moments and told him that I too was in the charismatic renewal, and he had a Holy Ghost pin attached to the top of his habit. And he too said that he was in the charismatic renewal now for 8 years. And after the Mass, though, the people also continued to say 7 Our Fathers, Hail Marys, and Glories, which they started to say right from the beginning. But that's always part of the services. We always had dinner after the Mass, which was 9:30. But actually, by the time we had dinner, it was 10 o'clock or 10:30. But nobody seemed to mind. All our group shared after the end of the day. We all got together and shared what the day meant. And they liked the sharing sessions. They also liked a few jokes that I told. And then on Friday, July 22nd, I didn't go out in the morning. I really needed to rest, so I took that time off. That was also my time for fasting on bread and water. So I had a breakfast, a breakfast at 8:30, and talked with some of the pilgrims who stayed in too. But they had gone to the Hill of Apparitions, which isn't very far. It can easily be reached. But I had Mass for them in the motel for the pilgrim group, and 38 were there. And I explained the Mass's healing. They were very open, very deeply impressed, and said after the Mass they felt now that their pilgrimage had really gotten off to a good start after the Mass. Some had an image and also had words of knowledge like we get here, received images, experienced pain. Some had signs of warmth, electricity, feeling light, and everyone, of course, said they had a feeling of love and joy and peace. We then took a bus to Mostar, where Father Josef Zufko, the first pastor involved in the apparitions, now is the pastor. And he shared for 2.5 hours what the early days were like. It was most interesting. Talked in Croatian, but it was translated. And he said in the beginning he didn't believe the visions at all, wouldn't accept them. And the bishop was urging him. On five occasions, the bishop came to him and said, accept it. But he wouldn't. And he said it led him into the most confusing state of conscience and confusion he ever was in. Because if people were responding and he wasn't, and he felt left out of it, he felt that he couldn't act, and he had to decide, you know, what to do. When little Yaakov got a message from Our Lady, once he was at Mass and Yaakov took him by the vestment, he was small at that time, gave him a piece of paper. And the piece of paper said, I want you to lead my people in prayer. That's when he called all the people. They were praying the rosary out on the mountain. He was down in church alone, saying his breviary. So finally, when they came to church, they started the rosary. In the course of the rosary, he was asking, what should I do? And finally, Our Lady appeared, and he saw her over the entire congregation. And from that moment, his whole life changed. And from that time, he began to protect the children against the police. He hid them from the police. He did everything to guard them. And the police wanted him to stop all this. He refused. He was put in jail. And he was in jail for 18 months before he was released. He was going to be there for 3 years. But there was such an enormous protest that they released him. Now, before he came to the church that day, everybody was there. It was a half hour, and they were just waiting. So people began to gab and talk and whatever. And one of the guides then said, is there anybody here who can lead the congregation in song rather than just be talking? So nobody came forth. I waited. And so finally, a few of them began pushing me to go up and lead them. So I did. I couldn't find a microphone. So I did it without a microphone. So we led them in Marian hymns, and then they asked me to sing a few other songs. So I sang the Palius Angelicus by Caesar Frank and Schubert's Ave Maria. We returned from the rosary and the Mass toward evening, and then prepared to go to Mass. And there were about 40 priests celebrating. Again, the church was crowded. And at this time, a number of our pilgrim group, among others, saw the sun change colors, moving backward and forward for about 15 minutes. I asked them to explain it, and they said, when they first looked at the sun, it looked normal like you do. You can't look very much, but all of a sudden, a film was over the sun. And then they could look with ease. Then it began to change colors, move backward and forward. And they said it was eerie. Our dinner that evening, as we shared, was hilarious. Everyone was enjoying the sharing, and even our host, that's the husband and wife, the mother and father. Her name is Svita, and his name is Andrej. And I could talk in Croatian with them, and they would ask me to interpret. So we had a lot of fun, and so we shared our day for some time, and again, each evening I gave them a blessing. And the following day, our group met at 9 o'clock to prepare for the liturgy, which we were going to celebrate. And we had a votive Mass of Our Lady, with 20 priests celebrating, and Father Philip Pavic, who is an American, but he speaks Croatian, and he's assigned there now. And he led them in as a cantor in song and the responsorial psalm, which he sung. And then I led the people in an understanding of the Mass, explained how the Mass was healing. The church was full. The members of our own pilgrim group did the readings and the petitions, and then I delivered the homily on the Mass's healing. I have reason to believe it made a deep impression on everybody present, and they said so after the Mass, and also the priests were impressed and said they were touched by the Mass. I explained the parts of the Mass that were healing, and found them all open to healing and responding enthusiastically. Even the priests held hands, as I asked, and they embraced at the kiss of peace, as did the people. And at the minor doxology, the whole church yelled, Amen! And I only had 1 hour, so I could not explore like we do here on the response. I left it up to the Lord. So I had to reduce the time for the healing. But after communion, I had the people say, "Jesus, I believe you can heal me, thank you." And they were very touched. And one man with whom I had that confrontation, when he came to communion, he was in tears. And he met me at the sacristy door to share with me. And after the Mass, many of the priests came to me to say how moved they were by the celebration. And outside the church, a number of people wanted my name and address and were very appreciative, said that they'd like to keep in touch, wanted tapes, and also to invite me to come to their part of the country. I also met a priest there who was with me at the Mass. His name was Father Richard Gant. He has a television camera, and he's hoping to set up a television station in Medjugorje. Invited me to his home and put down about 45 minutes of televised recording of my witness on a number of topics, including the message of Medjugorje. In the home where he was staying, I met the lovely elderly couple who lived there and talked with them, of course, in Croatian. And as I wanted to reach them, I finally found them in a room, but outside the door, I heard them quietly saying the rosary. Now, that was about 3 in the afternoon. So you wonder, in other words, how often they say the rosary. Also prayed with the husband for healing. He had 3 forms of illness. And, of course, Father Gant heard my confession, and I heard his confession. And then, really, that was tiring, and I felt washed out. That was 115 degrees that day. So finally, on Sunday, we went up to the Križevac, where the concrete cross is. Got up at 4:30 that morning. And it was the most rugged, rocky path I've ever traveled. I've been over mountains, many, in the Alps, in the Allegheny Mountains. I've been to Palestine, made a station to the cross there twice with the pilgrims. But that was the most grueling Stations of the Cross I ever made, because I had no way to wipe my face. I had a book in my hand, trying to hold my hat, and people were offering me water. I was getting dehydrated. It took 45 minutes to walk up there in that sun. But that's a pilgrimage. And it was just melting us. I saw a number of young boys, girls, and women walking over the sharp stones in bare feet. And some feet were bleeding. So it wasn't, you know, child's play. They were saying the rosary quietly, and finally we did reach the top. We met a lady there who was at the Mass, a travel agency in Jacksonville, Florida, in the Charismatic Renewal. At that time, she expressed how pleased she was with the Healy Mass, and knowing that I was coming to Florida, invited me to come, which I couldn't do, it's too far south. But we took the bus back because it's such a long walk. We went to the went there and back in the bus. But everybody was happy about the celebration. And we had a Mass in our motel. And everybody was happy with that, including the grandmother of the house. Prayed with her for healing. So we shared for a while. Some had healing, including one of the men going up the mountain, began to have chest pains. He has a heart condition. He remembered the prayer we said, "Jesus, I believe you can heal me, thank you." And he said by the time he got to the top of the mountain, the pain was all gone. And then we took pictures. Everybody seemed in a very happy mood. They do have restaurants, so some of us went to a pizza place to enjoy some pizza. And then did some shopping. And you must know that there are all kinds of piety stands, just hundreds of them. I know whether to say hundreds. But they're all lined up along all the roads leading to the church, right up to the steps of the plaza. And it's beginning to take on a garish appearance. And only right on the plaza in front of the church is there any kind of reverence that you might say. But even the people, as they are sharing and having an ice cream, they do have that there too. I had some. And but they're quiet. And everyone agreed to have a mass, though, the day we were leaving at 8 o'clock the next morning, which, however, happened to be the biggest feast of that parish outside of Christmas and Easter, the Feast of St. James. That's their parish. The custom there is that for every family in the area, two families from outside come to visit them. So for that occasion, every family prepares two lambs, whole lambs. So the family we were with were preparing two lambs on Sunday, because Monday was the day we were leaving. And it's an all-day roast. And those delicious odors were traveling all over the area. And I told them how I loved lamb. So they gave me a piece of lamb to take home, which I had to declare at the airport, and they took away from me. Not before I tasted some of it.
Oh, okay.
But I have to say that for myself, my own impressions, and what did it mean to me personally? First of all, I did not have to be convinced. I didn't have to see the phenomena, and I didn't. But what I saw there was tremendously impressive. The devotion of the people, the austere life they live a hard life. They get up at 4:30, then they look to their livestock, they have farms. I saw corn, acres of vineyards, but they have a large acreage, and maybe five or six families work that large acreage. So much belongs to this family and that, and they know which is which, and they cultivate that. So each day they have to do that. Now it requires work all day. And then they come home at 4:30, wash up. Well, how much before 6 when they go to church? And they're there for 2.5 or 3 hours. At 9:30, they have their dinner. Now, what kind of a day is that? That is a very hard day. The family that we were with did have television. How many of them have it, I don't know. The father of the house had a car, but he did not work in the town. He worked in Chitluk. I don't know what kind of work. I think he told me, but I forget. But more and more, they are beginning to show some of the prosperity. I saw, as I said earlier, about 25 to 30 motels being built in different stages of progress. And working all, I don't think they worked on Sunday, they didn't, but up all 6 days, Saturday included. And all kinds of restaurants, by all kinds I meant, I thought I saw about 6, 7, or 8 restaurants. Some of them are fast food, like the pizza, but others are restaurants, including Ivanka's husband. He has a restaurant, and some of the people went there. But none of us saw her. She has a little child. She's not available. And so I never got to meet the other four, but I saw those two. I was very much impressed with the Mass, always. The people are fervent. You can see the faith in their faces and the way they pray, and it's no small deal to kneel on that hard floor for 3 hours. Some of them just sit because it's such a trying posture, and others just stand. They endure it. These people are used to enduring hard things. The elderly women dress in black. That's a common custom. But the younger ones, they dress like all the Americans, the boys as well as the girls. And I saw no extraordinary responses of people who almost seem hysterical because something's happening to them. I do see fervor. By that I mean people intensely devoted and praying. As they come to church, many of them, there's a statue of Our Lady outside near a water fountain, and they all go up and either kiss the statue or the feet, or they place their hand along the mantle just to touch the statue. It's like saying hello to the mother, and that's their greeting, and then they go into church. There are sisters there from different countries, saw them. The priests are always available. Loretta Young was there with her son. The priest who interviewed me with a television camera said that he helped to carry her up that mountain. It took us 45 minutes because she twisted her ankle and she had to be carried. So you can imagine four men traveling that difficult route. But she was very touched by it. Other famous people like Martin Sheen, the actor, he's also prominent in the Blue Army film. He was there, and I think they were going to have a television crew from London that was going to make another televised series of the events there. But for my own prayer life, whatever, it wasn't anything that it isn't for me when I'm home, except that it was a new way of praying with, you know, thousands of people and seeing their devotion. I believe many of them really need conversion. I mean, from outside. They are really in a state of sin. Drugs, sexual hang-ups, maybe they're thieves, then atheists, away from the church for years. They really need to straighten out, and they do. Young people, I've never seen so many young people on pilgrimage. I've been to Lourdes, but I've seen adults, maybe young adults, but middle-aged people, but young people, I mean from 5 years on up, 5, 12, 15, 18, many of them, and from all the cities around there, and wearing rosaries or carrying them in their hands, saying it on the road, and their life is very simple. For them, the rosary would be like my mental prayer. They're so much at ease with that. And they find it just a great comfort. Many of them go up to the mountain. The mountain is blessed. There's something about it, you would have to say, that it's been touched by heaven. And people who go there feel it. Especially where the apparitions took place, that's the Hill of the Apparitions. I, unfortunately, did not make it. The day they went up there, I was so tired that I could not have made the day. That was the first day after we landed. And we didn't go up there again. But people have gone there, and just being there, were healed. Nothing else. Suddenly, their state of anxiety disappeared. Peace descended on them. They had physical healing. They had a great love for Our Lady. It's as if she was right there. Couldn't see her, but they knew she was there. On top of the mountain where the cross is, the huge concrete cross, several of our people went up there late at night. They came back very touched and said that there was a cloud. It wasn't too high above the cross, and they could clearly see the image of Christ in the cloud. It wasn't just imagination. And I brought some pictures of the cross lit up with no electricity. I'm only going to pass, well, there are six. This picture too, I think it might be quicker showing it to you this way. This picture here is a beautiful picture of Our Lady, and Father Yosef Zofko passed it around, gave a copy of this to each one of us. He is authenticating the fact that whoever took this picture of the wall in the sacristy where the children saw Our Lady, all he saw was a blank wall. When the negative came off, this is the picture that came. See? This is the image that came off. And the children say, this is what Our Lady looks like. And that's the way the statue is made. They have one life-size of Our Lady. Now, on top of the mountain, you've heard the cross lit up. Well, these pictures were sent to me. This moment I can't recall. But there's the cross, people in front of it, but there's no light, no electricity, whatever. See? There's no electricity, and it's just there, just all lit up. Now, here's another where it's not quite lit up, but you can see that there's light there.
But it's also kind of early in the evening. See? Now here are other more apparent. See? Very clear. No. This is taken by someone else. See? And here is another. A different color. Very bright. Notice? There are no candles, no electricity, nothing. It's perfectly dark. But everybody can see that for miles around. Here's another picture similar to that thing. Now that's very common. And that's really what galvanized all the people around there. They came in droves to the church. See, the only way Our Lady could reach them. These are simple people, so she had to give them heavenly signs. See? The communists thought the Franciscans had all kinds of electronic gimmicks up there to kind of bring the people in. So they went up there. They were going to catch the Franciscans. And they began digging around. They found nothing except torn up communist membership cards. The people had buried and disavowed their any relationship with the communists.
So now I showed some of you these images. Now this is more fantastic. Here is the cross in the background, but a silhouette of Our Lady right in front or beside the cross. See, it's undoubted it's a woman in prayer. See? Now this is taken right from the negative. This is not an imposition. See? Well, come up here. But now this is the cross. But now there's a silhouette of Our Lady right in front. Right in front of the cross. You see? See, the Franciscans have not denied the authenticity of these pictures. Because she wanted to discern what the Lord wanted to do with her life, which seemingly is she's going to start a religious community. She's going to become a nun. They're going to start a religious sisterhood, possibly. That is the possible conclusion there.
The priest that
took it.
Yes. Isn't that amazing?
This is the rectory.
Well,
the apparitions were in this room at the time.
Okay.
And people were out here saying the rosary.
And what is this here? Oh, that's the rectory.
That's the rectory again. This is the room where Our Lady was appearing before they had to go up to the choir lobby.
So when are you going to do this?
This is something,
there,
isn't it,
Father? We want to continue. And these phenomena, as they're called, are what the word says. They are extraordinary events that you try to explain scientifically, but there's no way to explain that other than what it is, a manifestation of a supernatural kind. And nobody can, nor have the Franciscans tried to explain any other way. It's too common. It's happening for years. How do you explain the word MIR in the sky? Who can put that up there? And over Scotland. There was a picture taken of that. I saw it. Over Scotland. MIR. Now, those people don't know the language, but Croatians do. It means peace. It means peace. That's the first word that appeared in the sky over Medjugorje. And, of course, all the people understood that immediately. And that's why they're responding. And even on the mountaintop, in the tape that you were listening to, you didn't hear it all, but the word is that the children seeing Our Lady there, and thousands of people there, they asked if, while they could touch Our Lady, they asked if the people could, and Our Lady allowed that. So the people came up, and they were touching Our Lady. At least that's what the children said. But then there were people in sin, and then Our Lady disappeared. See, she would not allow that. But after a while, she appeared again. But that phenomena, for example, of the children touching Our Lady, do they see Our Lady, as we believe, the glorified Madonna? The answer is no. What do they see? Well, if it was an objective body, then you and I would see it too. But heaven has all kinds of ways to provide a presence. But is it Our Lady? Yes, it is Our Lady. It's her presence. But she's providing, or heaven's providing, an image suitable to them, a Croatian young woman. Just like Bernadette saw a French, and Juan Diego saw a Mexican. Okay? And Fatima, they saw a Portuguese maid. See, that cannot be the glorified Jewish woman that we know to be the glorified Blessed Mother. However, the presence is real. Now, they're touching and seeing as if in three dimensions. That too is a creation. See? That too is a creation. They feel that they're touching her. That's allowed by heaven. They're even kissing her, embracing her. A mother with her children. See, that is a phenomenon. And of course, we can't say that they're not really doing touching Our Lady. They are. It's her presence. See? And I'm not diminishing, therefore, the visionary's experience, except that theologically that's the explanation for it. But the different things that are happening, the different messages, too, that the children get. Earlier we said, are they transmitting the messages accurately? See, are they putting their own understanding of what was said to them? There's where we have a difference. And this is why the church is very careful about approving a prophecy. Also, too, even if a prophecy is accurate, does it have to happen? Our Lady did say wars can be stopped. See? Or natural disasters, an earthquake that is in process now, and God knows of it, could be prevented. So then, if enough people do pray, if enough people do fast and do penance, then God will respond. But do we know finally what will happen? No, we don't. So then, what is your reaction? Are you going to allow your imagination to run away with you and all kinds of foolish fears? Foolish, I mean, because maybe, may never happen. And what will happen, we don't know. God doesn't want us. Jesus said, what? Sufficient for the day are what? The concerns thereof. Stay with the day. That's what we're obligated to. Otherwise, you are going to cook up all kinds of things, and you'll get into a terrible state, and the Lord doesn't want that. Besides, none of us know what's going to happen tomorrow, when the Lord may call us. People die every day in the most unexpected way. I remember a man at home once when I was a boy drinking coffee, and all of a sudden he fell back dead. He had a silent heart attack. And that was it. We don't know. So the lesson there is, be prepared. Every day. Make your peace with God. Be as prayerful, as Christian, as holy as you can be. You have nothing to fear.